What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission, to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website. And you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode. What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so. And that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, giving it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. And if you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give it 5 stars on Spotify. Hit subscribe if you are watching on YouTube. Tell a friend about the podcast and check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month. Those are available on Spotify, and the links for those are in the episode notes. Hope everyone is doing well out there. Stoked to get into episode 408 of the podcast with Anna Kellum, singer-songwriter based out of Georgia. But Anna is all over the place, as she is not only a musician, but also on the music industry side of things, tour managing, often out on the road. And I recorded this chat with Anna out at the Treefort Music Fest in Boise, Idaho, just about a month or so ago. And I was unfamiliar with her music going into Treefort, but when I was going through the lineup, she was definitely one of the singer-songwriters who really grabbed me with her tunes. So stoked that I got to spend some time with her out there. We did this one pretty early in the morning, as you know, doing things like this at festivals, you just kind of squeeze it in when time allows. So we got up early to record this one, and glad we made it happen. I was really impressed with Anna's songwriting, and just her hooks just immediately grabbed me, and just absolutely love her lyrics and ability for storytelling. So excited to share this one with you. And Anna is so vulnerable through her songwriting with her lyrics, and I thought she was equally as vulnerable on the mics with me through this discussion, and just the way she was willing to reveal herself and just things about her life. So I really appreciated that, and really excited to hear more music from Anna in the future. She's got a new record that is done and awaiting to be released. It probably won't drop until next year, but she shared that with me the day before we chatted, and there's so many great songs on there, so look out for that in the near future. But if you do enjoy this chat and you enjoy the tune shared, Anna has a an EP called Fetch that is out and available on all of the streaming services, so you can check that out. And if you're watching on the old YouTube there, you can just go ahead and ignore my ridiculous pit stains. You know, it's a real mess there with the shirt, and it was, what can I say, it was under hot lights, it was a new room of to record these things, and it happens, you know. Maybe I'm gonna think about more undershirts as I do more and more of these video recordings for the podcast. But all the links for Anna Kellum will be in the episode notes. Big shout out to her for giving me some of her time out at the festival, as she was not only playing the music festival but also working as a venue manager for Tree Fort. So she is always staying busy, always grinding, and finding some time to write tunes in between all that. So this is the last of my chats from out at Tree Fort. So hope you enjoyed the last couple weeks of Rosie Tucker, and last week with Backhand from Salt Lake City. And this week we've got Anna Kellum from Georgia. And with all that, this is episode 408 with Anna Kellum, and we're going to kick off the episode with a track from that Fetch EP, and a tune that we talk about a bit during this chat. It's called Run, Run, Baby. Let's do the damn thing.
Savannah makes me anxious. There are way too many bars. Right there's where I fell and got the scar. The tree in the middle's where I wrapped my car. But I was just too drunk and it was getting dark. The South Georgia air tastes the same. Like muddy water and songs of praise. It still feels heavy like my grief and shame.
Recording?
And it's been
yep.
2 weeks since the
You're
day
recording? Everyone's recording? Feel good? You ready?
Yeah.
Ready to do it, Anna?
I'm ready to do it.
All right. I'm excited to chat with you. I'm very new to your tunes, but you're one of the songwriters that stuck out to me on the Tree Fort lineup this year when I was going through, listening to tunes, and just, yeah, as soon as I checked out that Fetch EP, just was immediately drawn in with the first track, and I was like, definitely going to listen to all the songs that are available right now, so
yeah.
Excited to chat with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Talk to me about your early memories of music.
Early memories of music. So I grew up in a Southern Baptist church.
Okay.
So that's like a lot of the music I intuck from a kid.
Yeah.
And then I lived with my grandparents at some point, and so my only knowledge of music was like hymns, Johnny Cash, and Patsy Cline.
Okay.
Because he would play guitar and that, and like just play Johnny Cash on repeat. And then my like mom that raised me, I was like raised by a different family. And my mom that raised me was in a Patsy Cline cover band. So that was up until like 7 to 10, that was like my knowledge of music.
Was there like instruments around the houses that you were living in?
A bit. I played violin at that age. I cannot play violin anymore, but I did play violin at that age.
That was the first instrument?
That was the first instrument. I was like really good at it. I did like state competitions and stuff. But then when I was in fifth grade, the school I went to would pull you out of class to do your private lessons.
Yeah.
And my teacher didn't like me and told me I wasn't allowed to do private lessons. It was actually like kind of messed up because it was like he told me I couldn't do it because I missed 2 weeks of school because my mom passed away. And he was like, yeah, you've missed too much school. You can't do violin anymore. And I was like, that's so dumb. Anyway, but that was my music until then. And then, sorry, that just derailed real quickly.
No, you're doing great. So that was that like the end of the violin?
That was the end
then?
Of the violin. But I was like one of the top violin players for my
that's
age
crazy.
In the state. I would have been I would have been in an orchestra somewhere maybe right now. Who knows?
Have you ever tried to pick it up to see if like any of the like muscle memory comes back for it?
I would want to. I really want to like learn how to read music.
Yeah.
And learn better music theory because I did it like did like the AP music theory in high school, but like it's all gone. Like
yeah.
I just don't, I don't know. I want to do a lot of things. If I ever get to them, I will see, but I do need to like learn basic music theory again, I think.
We're going to hear you playing violin on a future record of yours.
I love strings. Actually, like I incorporate a lot of strings and woodwinds and throughout my music, especially like I have one orchestral track that we're working on right now that's been really fun.
Sweet. And this is all, you're grown up in Georgia?
I grew up in Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah. And, music. Back to music. Sorry, I just completely just started talking down a rabbit hole.
This is what you're supposed to do on a podcast.
Yeah.
this is it.
Did violin and then started musical theater around the time my mom passed away. And then, so about 10. And then, auditioned for a performing arts high school in eighth grade.
Okay.
Failed my audition. Didn't know how to sight read. Didn't know solfege. But the day I auditioned, the choir teacher had broken her hip the day before. And so the principal of the school auditioned me and he said, you're a good singer though. I'm going to say that you passed your audition. So then I got into this performing arts high school. I had never done an actual day of choir in my life, like a proper choir, and then realized I was behind everyone and then went home every day for the entire first semester of high school and taught myself how to sight read for like 3 hours a day and then like did all state choir and then did like an opera program at Carnegie Mellon and then realized it was like really cutthroat and was like, I don't want that competition. And then I didn't touch music again. At 18, I wrote 3 songs, had like new basic chords on a guitar, and then I didn't touch music again until like 2 years ago.
Hey, so you were able to figure it out though, like under pressure after you did get thrown into the choir situation,
I
put in the work to catch up.
Yeah, I loved it. I was like very much that was my personality in high school. It was only choir.
Yeah. But there was like no signs of any of your own songwriting at that point.
There was like some. I was very, me and my best friend were very invested into songwriters. Like our favorite band in high school was like Shovels and Rope.
Okay.
And we like loved like Butch Walker. And we talked about it and we like kind of tried to write songs together. But I would say she mostly wrote. But then I, like, around 18, just got, like, 3.5 songs out of me.
Okay.
And then I didn't write another song until I was 22.
So, like, in high school, would you be writing some form of lyrics, even if they weren't, like, intended for making songs at that point? Like, was there some sort of, like, poetry or just, like, free writing about things?
Kind of. If I had, like, a thought I liked, I'd write it in a notebook, but
okay.
I don't practice writing. Like I don't journal. Like my writing process a lot of times is just like random sentences I like in a phone note.
Yeah.
And building around that. But I've never been a writer. I wasn't much of an English kid. I was a math kid. So it's a very strange thing. My only writing I do is songwriting.
Okay. And were you going to like shows and stuff when you were in high school or like were you pretty like drawn into just live performance in general and just seeing music?
Yeah, I went to a lot of shows. Like I said me and my best friend, we went to maybe like 15 Shovels and Rope concerts.
Oh, wow.
In high school. I was saw Ben Howard front row at the Tabernacle. I was also obsessed with Ed Sheeran at the time.
Okay.
I like literally bought burner phones to win radio contest in school to meet Ed Sheeran.
That's amazing.
And that was, it was a whole time in my life. I met Ed Sheeran like 6 times.
That's crazy.
That was the only celebrity somewhat like infatuation I had until recently. I like kind of became infatuated with this like an artist. Not really. Now it's an adult. Now it's not like that where it's like a kid like infatuation, but like Ed Sheeran was my only celebrity crush I remember growing up. And then Renee Rapp came around and she's like my second celebrity crush, but ever.
So when you like saw, when you would go to these shows and see people play music, did that kind of like speak to you as maybe something that you wanted to do?
Yeah, it definitely did. And I definitely, I have this album that I'm working on right now that is like the story of me and my mom mostly. And that is a story I always knew, like whether it was an album or a book or something, I like knew that it has to get out of me.
Yeah.
And I always know that I always felt like that is my story to tell, that it's going to be my one unique thing in the world. And so I knew at some point I wanted to do it. But I also think when I'm writing songs, I never write normally in like, very seldom do I write in an emotional state. And so I think like, I didn't write about that those experiences till I was 22 because I had processed them at that point, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Did you, did it always kind of make sense? Like when you did start like songwriting more consistently, did it make sense for you to like kind of process the world around you or like what you had been through? Sounds like you've been through like a lot of adversity, especially as a kid.
Yeah. It was more...
Round of applause for the adversity that you faced. I don't know if anybody can hear it.
It was more, it's not more of like processing when I write that I feel like I'm processing those things. I feel like it's like this actualization of like realizing where I'm at, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like I feel like by the time I'm writing, it's like about things 2 years ago and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I like have changed and I have grown. And that's like my song. That is my biggest song. It's called Dog Park. That was like when I wrote it, I just kind of was like, lately I've been feeling all right. I'd been so angry for most of my life and I didn't know how to end it. And all I could say was like, I have changed. And I was like, and I like had a good cry when I wrote that because it wasn't like processing any of these old emotions that I was writing about. It was just like, aw, I really have.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying it, because it's literally coming out of my subconscious. I'm like saying the things that are in reality. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's I love your lyrics. I think that it feels like there's a lot of honesty and vulnerability in them, but then there's also just like the random lines about the Starbucks being built in your old neighborhood or things like that that I think are you can attach to just as much as like the heavy stuff of talking about, you know, wrapping your car around a tree or something like
yeah.
that from drunk driving.
Oh, yeah. I've never wrapped my car around a tree while drunk. A lot of people have asked me like, what? But I was in an Uber one time and a drunk driver wrecked into us and our car did get wrapped around a tree. And there has been a time I probably should have gotten a DUI and I'm so glad I got home safe. So
yeah.
there's a lot of honesty there, but I've had like a few people, like my friend Mahir was like, I remember you showing me the tree that you mentioned in the song. And I was like, no, cause that's not true. I didn't do that.
I think that's being a good storyteller is like finding the ways to kind of, you know, make things more interesting when you're writing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's kind of come pretty natural for you to like take real life things that have happened such as that situation and then like figure out how to make it maybe like a more compelling story to listen to through the music?
I don't know. Like when I was writing that, it was like, it was more of like sonically, like I knew I thought I wanted to get across. And that song started with the first line, which was just like, Savannah makes me anxious. There's way too many bars.
Yeah.
Which I think is funny because it's true. If you've been, Savannah's like a sister city to New Orleans.
Okay.
And so it is like heavy drinking culture and everywhere you turn, there's another bar. But I knew that I needed something in that syncopation, and so like of the way, I don't know, words, but I needed it to sound in a way. And so like and right there's where I wrapped my car, which just felt like a good thing of like, oh, here's where I fell outside of this bar, which I'm picturing an actual bar where I like almost broke my elbow.
Yeah.
Drunkenly falling on gravel when I was I of age at that point? I was 21. I started drinking in bars in Savannah when I was 16.
Is it just, is do you feel like that's just like part of the culture where you can kind of like sneak in, or
I never had a fake ID. My first time going into a bar, and I mean, I was a kid. I looked like a kid. I literally went in at 4 p.m. and knew what I was doing, went to the opening of the bar, went to a nice cocktail bar and was like, can I get an Agricole daiquiri and a shot of Fernet so they wouldn't mess with me? And then I just started like, and I worked in restaurants and bars, so I just started going out with people and they would card me because I was with the other bartenders. Okay. And then
they just assume.
But it got really uncomfortable recently. Like I went back home for a bit and I was talking to a bartender that had served me since I was 16, and I had kind of told him when I was 18 that I was like, oh, I wasn't 21 2 years ago, but I'm 21 now. So then he was like talking to me and he was like, yeah, they're about your age, about 29 or something. And I was like, ooh, boy. I was like, I am 25.
How do you feel like being from that part of the country has like maybe informed your style of storytelling or like lyrics, or like maybe shows itself in the music, if at all?
Yeah, I think, well, first, just growing up on country and gospel music, there you can hear it in anything. I have like a folk twang to it. I think it's like very kind of like Maggie Rogers. You can always tell like what she grew up listening to. I think you can hear it in mine. And like, I have some songs that I've written that I'm like, we have to do the production differently or it's going to sound churchy, which is okay because it's not churchy. And that's a whole thing. Like Phoebe Bridgers is just church music, but cool thing. So it's fine to use the chords that you grew up with. But so that's definitely sonically. I think imagery too, like talking about air being humid and trees and things like that, is very like the landscape of where I'm from. And some of the songs I'm working on now, I talk a lot about water, and I grew up next to water. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. And then also just like thematically, I bring up a lot about just like kind of spiritual things, I think, because I was in the church for such a long time.
Yeah.
And in a very intense church.
Can't shake that imagery.
Yeah, no.
It's always so powerful, I feel like, that type of stuff, like in lyrics.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's compelling. I mean, it's literally made it like when you're used to that language, it's literally made to compel people and sometimes manipulate people. And so it's very compelling words and chord sequencing and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Did you have a lot of like peers or friends that were playing music around, like aside from going to see bands like Shovels and Rope and other artists that you really liked, like did you have friends that were actively playing music live?
Yeah, my best friend, she was always proactive and always doing so much. She's like one of the most prolific writers I've ever met. She has a project, her name's Madison Major, but she was always like writing and playing guitar and pushing herself, which was always like really cool to see. But in high school, no, and in college, no. Now I do. But
hard not to once you've like gotten yourself. I know like you also do some tour managing, so you're like deep in not only into like creating music, but like being a part of the actual like industry or the scene.
Yeah, it's been really cool though, because you start and you like, there's songwriters that I love that are like very small, but they feel like they're like untouchable.
Yeah.
And then you start meeting people and then they like are like, I like your music, and you're just like baffled by it. And then you're like, whoa, now I have this community of like songwriter friends that felt unreachable like just 6 months ago. But it's like, honestly, they're just all people and they're all small, and none of us are like, all of us are doing like the things that we are trying to do, or whatever. Words are hard. That's what's gonna be the thing I probably say most. But it's like, ultimately at the end of the day, we're all still mostly broke and like just trying to work jobs to like get enough money to like do the thing that we love and like write and connect to some like inner part of ourselves through words and share that with other people. And it's so small.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So approachable. That's my thing, is it's so easy to meet people and
yeah, it's
connect.
Surprising sometimes. Yeah. As long as you like treat them as if they're just humans and not these like people that you have built up to be something in your mind.
Yeah.
Was it pretty validating for you as far as like your own songwriting once you started meeting some of these people that you felt like were untouchable and they were like, I also like your music? Was that like helpful to what you were doing?
Sometimes. I don't really know what my songwriting style is or have like structure in it, and I'm still so new to it that it feels like fake, but it also feels like natural. Like I don't know what I'm putting out. I don't think about verses, bridges, choruses, but it feels nice to know. The thing I mostly care about is like that my words are connecting, and I think like that's a lot of people say that, and that's cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, they hit like throughout all of the songs that I've heard. I sat and listened to your new record that will come out later this morning, and yeah, it's really great.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's just one thing I love about your music is just that I feel like before the song is even over, like when I've heard it for the first time, is that I feel like I'm already like singing along by the time it's over.
Aww.
And it's like not just the hooky like choruses, but I feel like there's a lot just throughout the songs, like in the verses.
Yeah. I love that album. I mean, I got really sick of it recently because I've sat with it for a minute, but I love that album.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of artists get put in this position where they have maybe a record done and then they have to end up sitting on it for a year or even more. What is that experience like for you, just having something sitting there that you probably want to get out into the world?
Yeah, that experience is funny. I've grown bored of those songs, but I'm trying to write new ones. But it's also just an interesting thing because I don't have a team and I want to put this album out in the best way I can, and I don't entirely know what that means. And so I just have it and I don't want to hold on to it forever, but I'm trying to find like the how do I do distribution? I like want to get it pressed on vinyl. I want to have that all ready to go when I release it and not wait. And I want a tour. And so it's a strange thing, but it's exciting. It's more of like, I want to get my ducks in a row. And I do have like an end goal. Like I will release my first single from the album without fail by the end of the year. Yeah. And that means I will have to have my distribution and plan for the album and PR plan and all of that in place by the end of the year. Yeah. So it's not like I'm gonna hold on to it forever, but it's an interesting thing to navigate because you're like, no one tells you, and then you're just in contact boxes on websites and just hoping you meet someone that can connect you with someone. Yeah. And you're like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And then it's also like rough to just throw something up and be like, I'm just gonna put this out in 3 weeks, because then you've worked so hard on something and then it's probably not gonna get the visibility that you want it to, or it doesn't even stand a chance to at that point. Do you find that like your relationship with those songs has changed quite a bit?
Yes and no. There's like one song on the album, and I will not tell you which one, that I have had a hard time with the song from the beginning, and I put it on the album because people like it. But I only like the end of the song, and I hate the rest of the song. And the more I listen to the song, I'm like, ah! But I love the ending of the song, and I tried so hard to write that song. Actually, I'll just tell you which one it is. You listen to the album. It's Whatever Forever.
Okay.
Which, fun fact, never listened to American football growing up, but I heard that they have a song called Whatever Forever. And then I was like talking to my producer about it, and my mastering engineer was in American football. And so I like sent him a text and was
crazy.
Like, I was like, hey, I just found out you had a band that had a song that has a title like that's going to be the same title as my song. Definitely not the same song, but I can't remember how it goes, but I loved the one that I listened to by American football. It gave me a good punk, but I love the end of that song, and I have struggled so hard to like the rest of the song and write it, but I didn't want that outro to go to waste, and so it's on the album, and a lot of people like it, but that song I like skip to the end every time. And just I'm like, don't let me listen to the rest of it.
It's all worth it for the outro for you.
Yeah, but you know, I think maybe I'm wrong, but I think a lot of artists probably have a song on each project that they're like, could have cut it,
not sure if that's
considered it.
Yeah,
but it's like I genuinely believe in every other song on that album in its own form. So if I've struck 1 in 11, it's fine.
Is it also just maybe like trusting the people that have heard that song that have told you, hey, no, this is a great track, it's not just about the outro?
Yeah, it is my producer's favorite song, and so I'm like, now I feel bad if I wouldn't put it on the album. And the outro is so good. It's such a good outro.
Did you make Fetch the EP with a producer as well?
Yes, his name's Tommy Troutwine. He does a lot of the music coming out of Athens, Georgia.
Okay.
He is phenomenal. I'm trying to think of like some of his bigger projects he's worked on. He's done like Hey Nothing and like Lighthearted. But me and him work so well, and no matter what I do in life, I want him to be involved in some capacity on every music project I do.
So he did the full length as mm-hmm. well?
He did the full length. He's going to do my second full length that we're starting in May too.
I feel like that's the big benefit of sitting on a record is that you can already start making the next one to
yeah.
follow it up, and maybe you don't have to like, it doesn't have to be a couple years before it actually sees the light of day.
Yeah, that's like the goal, is I want 2 records completely done by the end of this year, so then when I start releasing, I can tour heavy and like really. Oh, I'm saying this on the mic. I hopefully know what none of my bosses watch this. So my goal is to drop out of my jobs, probably at the end of this year, or mid next year.
Yeah, of tour managing, and
a lot
other,
of them.
Other
if I can keep one and do other, I would yeah. like that, but my goal is to like spend a full 2 years just only investing in my music project.
Yeah,
and then if I tour heavy and I don't have the time to write, I have 2 albums, so I don't have to worry about it for like 2 years.
Well, that seems fair. And also, I think if your bosses know that you're also a songwriter, they should want it to get to that point for you.
Yeah, they like my Instagram stories anytime I post stuff about my music. So
they're big fans of my IG stories. What do you feel like Tommy is able to bring out of your songs that maybe you can't see for yourself when you're writing on your own, like when it comes to actually recording these tracks?
Tommy is always focused on the song itself, which is awesome. Like, there's songs that I will like push for more production. He's like, no. He's like, the song is enough. But then also like, he is a perfectionist. Like, we spend a long time recording, and I do appreciate that about him, is like, he will not stop until it gets like perfect, and he knows everything about tones, and he just like brings this meticulous care of like a vision, which is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm assuming that just the hang is good between you mm-hmm. all when you're making records, if you want to just like make sure that this person is included in the process as well.
Yeah, the hang is great until I get hangry. And then I get hangry, and then we're like working on something, and then I accidentally say something like, hey, I hate that less, and then he's like, you need food right now.
We kind of jumped ahead, but what like when you're around 18 when you started writing songs of your own, what kind of sparked that, and did that happen from you picking up a guitar?
I'll just go for it. The first song I ever actually wrote is on my album, or started writing. I didn't finish it for 7 years. It's called Feel You Still. And I wrote it, I was babysitting, and I was 18, and I had these kids that were like 3 and 6 that were like, tell me about you when you were our age. And I like just got rocked, because like my mom was a drug addict. She was going to prison at that time. And I was like bounced from a few homes and just really not taken care of well. And so like, I just remember feeling all of that and then being like, I don't know what the what to tell you, and then feeling angry and just being like, I deserved to be like played with and like treated like how these kids' parents treat them. And so I like literally went home and like wrote the song that started as like a narrative of that. And then the second verse was more of like talking about her life and death and things that I wish I could have been there for, which was in like, I have a line in it that's like, thought the needles were just for sewing. And that's like, after my mom passed away, we found needles everywhere. And I was like, I didn't even know mom liked to sew. And I just remember my stepmom and my sister just crying. And I was like, why are y'all crying? And they were like, nothing.
Yeah.
And she died at 36, which is so young. But like, I grew up thinking, well, she was kind of old anyway. And now I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, you realize how young that is.
So that was like that second verse. And then the last verse is just like the fear of becoming her. And so that was like that. That was my first few songs, was like complete emotional catharsis. And it was all mostly centered around like that situation. And so, yeah.
Did you find some at that time? Did you find relief in working that out through song?
Somewhat. I think I definitely in that time needed to just feel the grief for a while, and that took a while, but it was, that was a dark time.
Yeah, no, that's super heavy. I appreciate you being so, I feel like you're as vulnerable in this conversation as you are in your songwriting.
Yeah, it was I like, you want to know something really cool though?
Absolutely.
Happy, that's kind of, I'm about all of this. Okay, so I have the song. We're talking about songs that are not going to come out for a long time.
That's okay.
Which is funny. But
we're going to get people so hyped for this record.
Hell yeah. I have this song called Questions that is a song that literally just is about everything I wish I could ask. And so like I start it and I say like, so premature because of a funeral I was born, which a lot of people think that means that I was conceived after a funeral because a lot of people have sex after funerals. That is not the case. I literally was like born like almost 2 months premature because my mom got so upset at a funeral. She went into early onset labor.
Oh, crazy.
So that's like a very true, and this whole song is very specific.
Yeah, it's just like solid storytelling and songwriting.
Yeah, but then the second, in some part of the first verse, I say like, I still want to meet the man who thought I was his just to say thank you, or maybe I'm sorry I'm not your kid. And so there was this guy who thought he was my dad for like a year. My dad and my mom had affairs. Are they affairs if you're not married? Cheated.
They had relations with other people
but they both were in their own relationships. And so I out pops me, and this guy thinks he's my dad. I didn't find him till like 2 weeks ago.
That's crazy.
Or like a month ago. I guess it was a month ago. Don't let me.
So you have a lot to write about.
Well,
now.
Well, no. Everything I've needed to write about him is in the song. It literally is. I just wanted to meet him to say thank you.
Yeah.
But he was so sweet. But yeah, I found that guy, which was cool.
That's very nice.
But
do you think just because of like what you've been through that allows you to be so honest through and like revealing through the songwriting, even if there is like some mystery and like people don't know everything like precisely or like exactly, or like sometimes you're putting things in there just to like make the lyrics come together and make the song come together, but like what do you think allows you to be so honest through the songwriting?
I think part of it is that I'm not really thinking about how pretty it's going to sound. And I think part of that's like also me not being a writer. When I write, it's kind of like direct. But I also think so a lot of the, what allows me to be honest is, I didn't ever really had anyone growing up tell me like not to say anything.
Okay.
And like, I also going back to the church, growing up in the church, so many people told me growing up, like, this is your story, this is your testimony. And so I was like literally told like, embrace that your mom's in jail, use that for other people. And so like I got really used to that. And then I had great social workers and counselors my whole life and I also like definitely had complex PTSD, but I built my identity on that story until I was like 21. Which is fun now because a lot of friends, I'll have friends for years and they like don't even know my mom passed away. And that's like the coolest thing for me because my entire life was built around like my adverse experiences for like 20 years.
And I'm sure people that knew you around that time, like, put that on you too, of just like, that's the girl whose mom passed away.
Yeah. Which that happens, you know?
Yeah.
Small, like, especially just, not even small towns, just as kids, when those things happen, you know that about everyone.
Yeah.
When it happens.
Absolutely. And so I feel like I hear maybe a lot of, like, piano stuff on the records. Mm-hmm. So are you writing on keys and guitar when you're writing songs?
Yes.
And how did you come to, like, pick up those instruments?
I took a piano class. Well, I took some piano lessons growing up, and then I took a piano class in high school. I only know, like, very little on guitar and piano. I, like, know enough to write.
Yeah.
And then half the time I just am playing. Like, I have some stuff I've been writing recently where I have key changed and weird time signatures, but I don't know what I'm playing. I just figured it out on the guitar and just, like, I'm, like, only playing three strings, but I'm like, this sounds cool.
Yeah. That's kind of the beauty of, like, not knowing theory and what is supposed to happen, I think, because then you get those accidents that wouldn't happen from somebody that
yeah.
does know their shit, like, a little bit more.
Yeah.
Did it kind of feel like almost like that choir experience where, like, if you did put the work in, though, that you would, like, get the results you needed so that you could write songs?
You know, I think that a lot, but then I also think I would get hung up on, like, because, like, the way I would have to learn new, like, guitar stuff is probably by learning other songs, and then I think I would just, like, fall into mimicking those songs and then get stuck on a writer's block. I've been in a big writer's block this year. I literally don't know when I am ever going to write. but, like, I never know when it's going to come, and it's literally just, like, feels very, like, just comes immediately and flows, and I have a really hard time structuring it. And I think, like, when I do find chords I like,
yeah,
if I just play them on a guitar and get even more stuck.
Will you force yourself to write, like, amidst this
yes,
this drought?
I sit with a guitar most days,
yeah,
at least 15 minutes, and sometimes I get something.
Yeah.
And sometimes I get nothing. I also have, like, well, my phone's over there. I have all these voice memos that are, like, a lot of times it happens in a car where I'll think of a melody or, like, one little line, and I'm like, do 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 do, and it's just, like, me singing into my phone. So I think that's, like, practice. And I can't be too hard on myself. I've written, like, 20 songs in the last year.
Absolutely. And they're all of the ones that I've heard are really great. And I think that's cool that you find the time to, like, sit down. And
yeah.
Even if you're not feeling it, because it seems like good things can come of that, even, you know, even on the days that it doesn't, you know, maybe you get something out of it that you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't have done that.
I did that Adrian Linker songwriting course that I think everyone in the world did.
Yeah. This person, AC Sapphire, I just had her on, and she also referenced the Adrian Linker.
I didn't write a single song that entire course, and I sat through the course and I did the time, and it was so painful. It really hurt because I could not get anything. I could not get a single song, but I loved hearing her speak, and I thought she is so inspirational, and the way she sees the world is important, and it was important to show up.
Yeah.
And then to just, like, talk about creativity, and even if I wasn't, like, writing anything, it's, like, still important to, like, think about it and, like, think about, like, what world you would want to create, and, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Still have an impact on you even if you didn't, like, actively write any songs throughout that course.
I was so mad. I was so mad at myself. I was, like, internally beating myself up and being like, you're dumb. You can't write a song. You're in a songwriting course. Just write a damn song. Ugh.
I would imagine that your background and having the choir experience, though, really helped with your vocal chops once you did start writing songs. Like, do you feel like that's something you can at least, like, rely upon?
Yeah, I think that's my main strong suit is my voice. I get a little annoyed when I play gigs because no one ever comments on my songwriting. They only say, like, literally the only compliment I ever get after a gig is, man, you have a good voice. And I'm like,
what about the songs?
I think I get so frustrated about it because one time when I was like 20 or something and I was playing cover gigs sometimes, I made out with this guy and I always thought that, like, maybe, like, there was some flirty things going on. And I said, I was like, oh, I always thought that, like, you might have found me attractive or something. And he looked at me and he said, you're not attractive, but your voice is.
Yikes.
And so now I think anytime someone's like, I like your voice, I'm like, because that was such an awful.
That dude ruined it.
That dude did ruin it.
Brutal. What was it like when you first started playing some gigs? Like, was that scary for you?
Yes. I shake. I sounded like a lamb. So my first gig story is kind of cool. I played an open mic thing, and I used to work for a festival in Savannah called Savannah Stopover, and the owner came to it, and then she was like, you need to play Stopover. You need to apply. And I was like, haha. Yeah, right. And she's like, no, you're gonna apply. And then I didn't apply. And then she made everyone on staff text me the day applications were due and was like, send in something. So then I sent in something and they were like, congratulations, you're playing Stopover. And I was like, Kane, I don't have a set. And she was like, you got 6 months, you can write one. And so my first gig was like this festival, and I was one of the only indoor stages, and it was 30 degrees outside. So there was like 140 people in there, and I was opening for Quinn Christofferson. I had never played with a band before, and I sound like a lamb in the recordings. I am literally shaking so bad. But then that was my first gig ever. And I still, like, last year hated performing, but I recently got beta blockers and I really love performing now.
Do you think it's is it the actual performance part that, like, makes you nervous, or is it sharing your tunes?
It's most of the time neither. It's more of like when I am on that, like, adrenaline high of performing and I get nervous, it's more of like I'm so worried about what everyone else in the room is thinking about my performance.
I tend to romanticize my sadness through a writer's eye. I've been on the winning end of a losing streak, and I've never said it enough, but I've always had enough. If I'm honest, I've got more than I asked for. To be fair, there's more love than I deserve. I've seen the way this world it takes, it twists and turns and heals.
So, do you, like, aside from the beta blockers, you feel like it's just also, like, about getting the reps in, and that's what, like, made you more comfortable with performing live, or just, like, feeling like you're...
I still have very little reps in.
Okay.
I am very, very new, and I feel very lucky to have the gigs I have, because I got to open for an artist I really love. This is my fifth festival, maybe? I played 1, 2, 3, 4. I've played 4 Georgia festivals.
Okay.
And so this is my fifth festival. So I feel very lucky, but by saying fifth festival, I've probably only properly done like 20 gigs.
And a lot of it playing solo?
Yeah.
Is that, I would imagine that, like, increases the vulnerability of the thing too, when you're just up there by yourself?
Yeah.
Is it, I'm imagining you're almost always playing just like acoustic guitar for these types of gigs, mm-hmm. and not like lugging around a keyboard with
no,
you.
Yeah, I've just been like playing acoustic guitar, and I don't know how to play some of the songs I've been playing on guitar, but I just wing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just trial by fire. And
yeah, I've also started doing a thing recently where I just like play a half unfinished song just to try it out on the crowd. Just because if I didn't need enough anxiety already, I just want to induce a little more on myself to try an unfinished song.
See how it goes.
But those are normally fun. Like, I kind of like that little bit of anxiety of like, I want to try this out and I'm writing it and it is new, and just feeling how it feels in a space, because you singing it in your bedroom, or well, mostly your bathroom, so you get the good acoustics, isn't the same as like putting it in a room.
Yeah. How do you feel like your songwriting has evolved since maybe when you started when you were 18 to where you're at with it now?
I think I'm coming up with better melodic things, because I got really bored of 1-5-4. I don't know. Well, I guess actually I do know.
maybe. I know something. and it is that I wrote definitely that EP and most of that first album just from a place of catharsis. And now I am writing in a way of like writing and songwriting and thinking about things. So now a lot of times it's me reading memoirs and poetry books and like seeing a line I like that drags me to like brings me to my own personal experience and a memory I have, and like writing from that. That's like a lot of how I write now, is like starts from that. I also wrote like a verse to a song that's my favorite verse I've ever written, and I wrote it in a dream, which is kind of crazy.
Just like what do you mean by you wrote it in a dream?
I was okay, so it's Grimm Brothers, if you listen to the album this morning, and I had just, I actually wrote it at Treefort last year. I wrote it exactly a year ago. But I was sleeping and I was imagining my niece, who is my favorite person in the world, who is right now three. She had a dad who unfortunately since this year has passed away. But I was imagining having to hold her through her first heartbreak. And I remember like, I don't know what I thought it was, but I just remember like really thinking about like generational trauma and things like that. And but this is my dream. I'm holding my niece and I'm reading her The Little Mermaid. And then I like literally told her, I was like, I wish that I could tell you it's all going to be okay, that the storybooks you grew up on weren't first written with feta fates. And I was thinking about Grimm Brothers because I had just been on a tour in Hamburg and like saw like their town. And then I say like, it's the fault of imagination or maybe too much rain, that the morning, that whole little line.
It's killer.
But I wrote that in a dream, which was crazy. And then the rest of the song I wrote at Pangilly's in the backstage area, like while Taco Tapes, which is this like, I think they're from Oregon.
Portland, yeah.
I love them. I think they're the Pacific Northwest version of a Nashville band or whichever one we want to say.
Okay.
The Deslons. And I love the Deslons and I love anytime I'm around them. They're a fun hang. And Taco Tapes was so much fun to venue manage. But I've literally during Taco Tapes while they were just having a great time, I'm in the back like pinning like one of my most depressing songs like into my phone. But anyway.
I asked you earlier about how like Georgia has inspired your songwriting, but I know that you've like the last couple years you've had a lot of opportunity to travel around, tour managing. Do you feel like being in different environments has really inspired song ideas and like has shifted some of your experiences in that way?
Well, yes and no. I don't really think many places have inspired me because most of the times I'm staring in at a bright green wall in a green room and a laptop screen and counting 12s of shirts and sleeping 5 hours a night and waking up in a new hotel room. I love my job. I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it because touring is grueling. But I would say, though, in that same regard, I've written a lot about the idea of, like, missing home and, like, learning to breathe and learning to take your time and space. I am an extreme workaholic, so I've, like, a lot of things I've been writing recently are, like, there's no need to rush. Like, if I just sit for a second, I'll be fine, and, like, you don't have to rush for everything or work all the time. So I have had felt inspiration in that of like just sitting in sterile environments for 2 years straight.
I hear it. I'm that workaholic thing. It's hard.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love to work. I like literally I've been talking to the Treefort team cause, I also work for Treefort and I'm like, give me more, give me more, give me more.
Addicted to the game, Anna.
it's a blessing and a curse.
Do you feel like having those opportunities to work on the industry side has like helped you understand even more like what you want your career as an artist to be, or just like in giving you different perspectives that you wouldn't have had otherwise?
The biggest lesson I've taken from any of it is that your team is really important. I have two teams that I love to tour with, and I have had one team that was, they did not curate their team well, and it was a very, very, very toxic environment. And so I've learned a lot about, like,
I will, if I ever have the opportunity to have a manager and a booking agent, it will be someone I trust and someone I believe in morally.
Yeah.
Not just a big name management person, because I think they can give me opportunities. I've like learned how important, because you're working with these people 24/7.
Like, yeah, you spend a lot of time with them.
And I want someone who's going, ultimately, I know myself more than anyone else knows myself, and I want someone who's going to value what I say about what I want as my career. And I have seen where it goes really wrong, and I've seen where it goes really right. And so now I've like definitely know if I ever have the ability to have a team, like how I will build it.
Yeah. You mentioned Tommy earlier, your producer, but aside from Tommy, is there anybody that's had like a pretty big impact on just the way you operate as an artist, or like someone that's made you think about songwriting differently, that's stuck with you pretty heavy?
I am very lucky that I actually tour with Shovels and Rope, and I tour with SG Goodman, who I think is hands down probably one of the top songwriters of all time. And every time I watch her set, I'm just blown away.
She's incredible.
And I don't get sick of her set, which is absolutely wild.
That's a good place to be as the TM, I feel like, or like someone on the crew when you're like excited to see the music every single night.
I hope she doesn't watch this because I haven't told her this, but I like recently like looked at her guitar tabs and tried to sing one of her songs, and I was like, how the fuck does she sing this? It was so hard. I don't even remember which one it was right now, but I remember just being like, nope, we're gonna leave that to SG. But they both inspire me. Being on a bus with Carrie and Michael from Shovels and Rope is the sweetest thing. They are like the best parents, and watching, like, just hearing them talk about the world and how they see humanity, I feel like I am a somewhat callous, and I also think like I grew up kind of taught to like what can you take from people, and I've like tried to unlearn that and to see people just so like genuinely kind and just for other people is just like inspiring to also know that they're creatives and that they're doing this life, this hard life of a musician, and doing it so gracefully.
And just that's like beautiful that you grew up like going to these shows, seeing this band, and then you get to spend time with them on the road. It's like pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. It was my first tour job, but they're incredible people, very that's inspiring amazing. People.
Well, I love your songs, Anna. I'm excited for you to get this record out into the world whenever it does. But, you know, for now, people can check out the Fetch EP. That is that's available on all the things. Wherever people stream music, you can find Anna's tunes there. And highly encourage people to do so. And I'll put all the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with you and see where things go and whenever this new record drops for you.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you spending some time with me this morning, you know?
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, this has been super rad to talk with you. I'm very glad that I stumbled upon
your
tunes.
I think I've been smiling the whole time.
Good.
Mostly.
I hope that I hopefully like out of joy or having a good time.
Yes.
Sweet. Anna, we end every episode of the podcast with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is "It's a program." It's just the way my grandfather says the word program.
It's a program.
Exactly.
All
yeah.
right. And do I need to look at the...
Yeah, this is the one time I'm going to ask you to look into that camera, and you can deliver it however you would like to.
Do I do it the ASMR way? Do we like, it's a program.
See, you can do whatever you want. This is your opportunity. I will not direct you
in any way. Am I supposed to say who I am?
You can if you would like.
Okay. I'm going to do like a whole radio.
Do it.
Radio thing.
Give it to the camera, Anna.
Hi, this is Anna Kellum. We're here at Treefort, and it's a program.
She nailed it, everybody. It's Anna Kellum. Links are in the episode notes. We're going to play the episode out with Dog Park, which is such a great track off that Fetch EP. Links are in the episode notes. And that's the Jelly Jams, and we will catch you on the flip side. Treefort, Georgia, Portland, wherever you are listening from. Cool.
Okay.
Did it. Okay. Thanks so much.